So without doubt, those two genes are intimately linked with getting the condition. The question, of course, is how do those two genes actually cause you to get Parkinson's disease, and how does the environmental risk factors interact with that to give the condition, beginning in the gut and then spreading thereafter up into the brain and so on. Now, till recently, you would say, I have absolutely no idea how to investigate this. Because the only animal on the planet that gets Parkinson's disease is man. So every single animal model that is made of Parkinson's disease is not Parkinson's disease. It's only an approximation of what we see in the clinic. So how can I really interrogate how these genetic risk factors could be influenced by things in the environment to cause Parkinson's disease? Well, one of the things that I think has come about is this new way of investigating things through a very clever technology which is being widely used, especially here in Edinburgh, which is the capacity to use the patients themselves to generate the models to study the disease process. And this is possible because of something which happened a number of years ago, which is this new technology to make so-called iPS cells. Not IPA, iPS cells. These are induced pluripotent stem cells. Now, the person who developed this in Japan, I'm sure, will win the Nobel Prize for this because it has revolutionised what we can do in medicine and biology. And this technology essentially allows you to reprogram people's cells. So to give you an example, this is what it involves. So anyone in this room, make it sound very easy, it's not quite as easy, too late to tell you it's not quite as easy as this, but I'm going to tell you this is what happens. You can take a skin biopsy from anybody in this room. So we take a little bit of skin and we take it off to the lab. In the lab, we expose it to a number of critical factors, and that turns that cell into a pluripotent stem cell. So when you began life and the egg was fertilised, you turned into an embryo, and the first things you developed were embryonic stem cells. And every single cell in your body has derived from an embryonic stem cell. These are like embryonic stem cells. These are induced pluripotent stem cells. So that cell can now be driven into a nerve cell, can be driven into a heart cell, could be driven into an islet cell if you had diabetes. It could be turned into any cell. Of course, for our discussion today, what you can do is you can turn it into a nerve cell and you can turn it into a dopamine cell, which is the cells which are affected in Parkinson's disease. So in theory, I can take any patient with Parkinson's disease who we know have pathology in multiple nerves in their brain, but particularly the dopamine cells, and in theory, I can grow their dopamine cells from their brain in the dish from a piece of their skin. So that cell should contain the same genetic material that the patient has themselves. So those risk factors should be encoded in these new dopamine cells that I've derived in the dish. Now, obviously, this has made it very exciting because the possibility is that we could investigate and interrogate disease on a patient basis in the lab. More recently, people have actually been able to take this a stage further, and rather than take the skin cell and take it through an induced pluripotent cell to a nerve cell, what you can do now is you can take a skin cell and you can directly turn it into a nerve cell. So this is amazing technology. And when I first came across this, I thought this was the most amazing thing I'd ever heard of, until you actually start reading review articles and you realise that bees, so worker bees and queen bees, are genetically identical. So they are clones. The only reason you can switch, you change from a worker bee to a queen bee, is by royal jelly. So whatever that does, it changes the expression of the genes in those two cells and you turn from a worker bee into a queen bee. So if nature can do that, actually being able to turn a skin cell into a nerve cell, I thought wasn't quite as smart as I thought. But this has now been taken in the last 6 months a stage further, such that you can take skin cells from people and you can directly turn them into dopamine cells in their brain. So, and this system is very efficient, and it has allowed people to start looking at disease. People have yet to look at it in Parkinson's disease, but they've certainly looked at it in Alzheimer's disease. So we now have the capacity to look at disease in patients on an individual basis in the lab. It's not quite as straightforward as that, but that, in theory, is what we can do. So we can study disease, and it also allows us to do drug screening. So I can now, in theory, take your skin, turn it into a dopamine cell, and I'll say, now, I'm not quite sure what sort of Parkinson's disease you've got, but I want to see what drugs are going to slow down the disease in your dopamine cells. I'm going to chuck the kitchen cupboard at it and see which drugs in your case help. They might not help everybody, but at least I will know in your case whether they will help. And so this paper from Clive Svensson that Siddharth and I know very well, published a number of years ago in a different condition, a genetic form of motor neurone disease, did just that. He took a patient's skin. He turned them, in this case, into motor neurons because that's what was dying in the patient. He chucked various drugs at them and said certain of these drugs seem to have a preferential effect on these cells as opposed to other drugs. Whether that translates into a clinical effect, we don't know, but it offers the potential to take patient skin, model disease, and screen for drugs. Now, of course, you can do this, and I've said you can do it on an individual basis, but obviously that becomes a major problem. So you could just assume, well, actually, everyone's got the same form of Parkinson's disease, so I'll just take a couple of people, and that should do it. So that then, of course, raises the question, is everyone with Parkinson's disease the same? And the obvious answer is no, they're not. How many different types of Parkinson's disease there are? Well, you could say there are as many different types of Parkinson's disease as there are people with Parkinson's disease. But what I would say is that we can at least cluster people into different groups with different types of Parkinson's disease. So our own study, which began 12 years ago, tried to address this question. So the question we were trying to answer here was, are all patients with Parkinson's disease the same? And if not, what are the fundamental differences? How many different types of Parkinson's disease are there? And how does that play out on this model system that I've already drawn for you? So we began by collecting everybody in the county of Cambridgeshire over a two-year period. We've now done exactly the same since 2008. The details aren't important, but what we found was some quite interesting facts. So if you look at people with Parkinson's disease, and we follow them up, we've now followed them up again, so we haven't quite put this data up yet, but to 2009, we follow people up over time. What happens to them? Well, what happens to them is that they do vary quite significantly. So if we look here at this thing called Hernandyar 3, which is a staging of Parkinson's disease, Hernandyar stage 3 is disease that affects both sides of the body and one's balance. So that's quite a critical point in the evolution of Parkinson's disease.